BSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, July 10th, 2026. I'm your host, Nick Seabrook. Rabble.ca shares the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. This week's re-released episode takes us back to December 2007 for a little mix of everything. In this episode, we revisit old Rabble Radio staple segments, such as the Online Tools segment from former host Wayne McPhail, the Real Women segment where Kathy Bond and Judy Rebick critique films, and Rabble's U.S. correspondent Keith Gottschalk. Also in this episode, we're joined by Oliver Hodge, the director of the documentary film Garbage Warrior, about Michael Reynolds' environmental architecture. From December 2007, here is that episode. Take a listen.
Just outside my window, it's minus 22 by the thermometer and minus 37 with the wind chill as I record this. So while I go look for a sweater, Wayne, why don't you tell the people what we've got coming up on the show?
Sure, Megan. Keith Gottschalk talks about the political implosion of his good old U.S. of A. Director Oliver Hodge talks about his latest film on garbage. We travel to Mai Sot, Thailand, go back in time for a documentary about the weatherman. Oh yeah, and I've got a line on the cheapest, smallest, best computer around.
Well, given the temperature outside here in Whitehorse, I want to hear this next clip first. This is filmmaker Oliver Hodge speaking about the homes built by Michael Reynolds. They stay warm on their own all through the winter, and they're made from garbage. How lovely. Listen to this.
You've got to tell people what these buildings are made out of, because it's astonishing to me what these buildings are made out of.
The buildings are passive solar constructions that are made out of used materials like car tires, beer cans, beer bottles, the sides of washing machines, but they're all beautifully placed and rendered over with adobe, and the bottles are made a feature of, like stained glass, and the cans are made a feature of sometimes. And the buildings are actually very beautiful inside, kind of Mexican-y looking adobe kind of finishes, and artwork and all that kind of painting and finishing, but with lots of plants. The water's recycled four times within the building. You've got two planter systems that clean the grey water from your sink and your shower. You've got a black water system in the greenhouse that filters all the sewage from your toilet, and the captured water from the roof is drinkable water. It's filtered, and then it goes through these planters. And the water's actually used within the building to do your washing up, to grow your food in the kitchen. Then it flushes the toilet, which is another use. And then it goes through a black water system that grows more food, and that cleans it for the last time. So you're really living in a kind of biosphere. And there's loads of little pumps that go off, boat pumps and servos and switches. And, you know, if you do anything in the house, it reacts to you. So, you know, you go to the toilet or you have a shower and you can... Here, it's not too loud, but you can hear all these little pumps going off and pumping the water into another tank. And, you know, the building's like a machine, and it kind of lives and breathes with you.
And, well, it retains heat. I mean,
it retains heat. The tires, the back wall of the building is very, very thick. It's about 10, 15 foot thick in places. It's rammed earth car tires rammed with earth and built like bricks in a U shape around the side and the back wall of the house. That's the retaining walls, and then those tire walls are bermed up with soil right up to the top, with a very, very thick berm, about 15 foot. That berm is also insulated in the middle as well with whatever insulation they can use. Sometimes it's styrofoam, not particularly eco material, but the main thing is to get the building to run on zero or very, very low carbon, to have a utility bill of about $40 a year is what they're aiming for. So if they have to use a few unsustainable materials, you know, to get there, it's better that the building works for 1,000 years on very, very low energy than to try and make everything out of sustainable materials. Obviously, they will replace the materials with better materials when they're available and cost-effective or whatever. But so that's generally the buildings. The sun comes through the windows at the front. You've got a glass all the way along the south. They're always facing south, these buildings. They've got to be facing south in this climate. And the sun, the low winter sun comes through the windows and heats up the back wall. Or the summer sun. The summer sun the summer sun's deflected off. But any even light or just people being in there will give it heat. It'll slowly heat up. And it takes about a year to heat up properly. But that once you've got your building at its mean temperature, it'll hold it for a long, long time. So that's basically how the buildings work. The wall at the back is a third of the volume of the interior of the building, and it stores heat. It basically averages out the mean temperature of the building. So when you get a chronic temperature drop, the wall will stay warm, and that'll radiate out heat into the house. So, and it does work, because I've been there in buildings in the middle of the night, in the winter, minus 30 degrees outside. I went out for a cigarette. Couldn't even smoke the whole cigarette. It was so cold. I went back inside and I was down to a t-shirt within 10 minutes.
That was director Oliver Hodge speaking about the work of architect Michael Reynolds. Hodge's film about the architect is called Garbage Warrior. You can hear the full interview by traveling down the information highway to rabble.ca/RPN/NFB.
Keith Gostchuk is, as usual, not too happy with the current U.S. administration. He's not afraid to say it. The system is imploding. Canada's looking pretty good to him right now. Take it away, Keith.
Happy December, my Canadian friends. This is Rabble columnist Keith Gostchuk for Rabble Radio. Would there be too many tears shed in Canada if the United States implodes? I mean, on a one-on-one basis, we get along just fine, and I don't mean Condoleezza Rice and Peter McKay either. I mean, there are just enough of us USCN progressives to keep things jolly on both sides of the border, eh? Well, just in time for Christmas, American conservative commentator and former presidential candidate Pat Buchanan comes riding the fifth horse of the apocalypse to tell Americans we are doomed. Oh, Buchanan seems to be repeating an old shtick pioneered by comedian Alan King, who used to have these little TV specials with names like Alan King's Final Warning. Well, this time Pat is giving us his final warning in a book called Day of Reckoning, How Hubris, Ideology, and Greed Are Tearing America Apart. Yeah, a real optimistic title, that one, and that's from a conservative. Buchanan basically holds the dollar is crashing, our military is in shambles, our economy is owned by foreign banking interests, Mexicans are taking over the southwestern states, and we're dividing along class, ethnic, and racial lines. All this at $25.95, just in time for Christmas. The funny thing about all this is in places where I live, little towns on the peripheries of large cities, we're really not cognizant of our own impending doom. Well, sure, gas costs a lot, still more in Canada, but hey, Christmas shopping got off to a really great start, and the Browns might make the NFL playoffs, so how bad can things really be? It's at this time when we celebrate peace and brother and sisterhood on Earth that I wonder if something truly remarkable might happen if we put Pat Buchanan and Naomi Wolf in the same room together. They might actually agree on this. Wolf's newest work, The End of America, Letters of Warning to a Young Patriot, contains her 10 steps to fascism and examples of how the United States is following them. It's a chilling call to arms that has also ignited much discussion amongst the educated classes that make up about 15% of the American population. I envy Canadians, I really do. While the United States is in the process of tearing itself asunder, the entire Canadian media and government is wrapped up in another delicious and utterly Canadian scandal involving Brian Mulroney, whose shadow across Canada seems to be cast as large as Pierre Elliott Trudeau's, but for all the wrong reasons. So, what does this Karlheinz Schreiber know, and what is he willing to tell about the cash deals between himself and the former prime minister and all those other scandals he supposedly knows about? And did Pat Martin really call Paul Sable a son of a bitch? Oh, to get a live CBC feed of Parliament Hill next week. A 2-4 of blue and a mountain of popcorn for this one, for sure. You Canadians are so lucky. Your politics are fun and spicy, and your politicians are unrestrained and saucy. Our government is so boring and predictable by comparison. And your country isn't going down the toilet yet, if the worst things going on are scandals like this. I'm genuinely envious. Oh well, I need to go out and chop down some trees in the backyard for winter heating fuel and hock the family gold jewels to pay for some gasoline. You folks up there just enjoy the holidays and think well of us USAns mired in what Buchanan calls our existential crisis. See you in Buffalo for cross-border shopping. This is Rabble columnist Keith Gottschalk for Rabble Radio.
Thanks, Keith Gottschalk. We'll talk to you next time.
Mysot, Thailand is a town where many Burmese come to start a new life. It's also home to an English language school. One of our newest RPN producers, Sean Kassa, spent some time in Mysot collecting stories from the people living there. Here are a few of those voices.
I've been teaching English for the last 6 months. Been working at two organizations. One's called the Karen Information Center, and they document human rights abuses in Karen State. And they produce newsletters in Burmese, Karen, and English, and then send those back over the border into Karen State and to refugee camps along the border. The English news that they produce, they send to organizations and pressure groups across the world to let the international community know what's happening.
Mysot's a typical conventional border town. It's a town where you got two cultures melding together. You got a culture, the Thai culture, and then you got the Burmese culture on the other side, and the border is like when the two cultures sort of meld together.
The situation in Thailand is very, very strange. You know, many people from Burma come to Thailand, and then they are, oh, this is the so confusing here. Really so confused. Maybe some are politicians, some are the migrant worker. The amount of people in the borderline, there's a lot. And then there's there so many refugee camp in the Thai Myanmar border.
It's a cool city because you get to see sides of cultures that you don't see on either side. You get to see like how one people will use another people when they get the opportunity. And it's not like it's just Thais. People do it all over the world. Heck, people do it in the same community if they could, with like people of the same culture. It's just what the human race does.
First, like, major experience that sticks out in my mind is going to AAPP, which is the Alliance Group for Political Prisoners. So they support political prisoners when they've come out of prison and help them get across the border, and they produce reports and send those to the international community. And I remember going over to their small museum and walking around the room and seeing images of people who had been in prison and seeing the conditions of what it was like for them, and being given a tour by someone who had been in that prison themselves.
Those were some of the voices from Mysot, Thailand. To hear the full collection, head to a brand new podcast on the RPN. It's called Everybody Knows, and you can find it at rabble.ca/RPN/EVK. You're listening to Rabble Radio on the Rabble Podcast Network. Get a pen, or your BlackBerry, or your iPhone, whatever you've got at hand. But write this down. Our home on the web is rabble.ca/RPN. From there, you just click on Rabble Radio. My co-host Wayne McPhail is usually all about the online tools. They exist in a virtual world with nothing to really hang on to. But he's been researching hardware this time, and you won't believe what he's got for us now. A little computer for cheap. And it works. Is that even possible? You tell us, Wayne. You tell us.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and this is Online Tools for the 21st Century. Actually, today I'm not going to talk about an online tool. I'm going to talk about a tool that helps you get online. It's the Asus EEE PC, and it's worth looking at, especially if you're a nonprofit without a lot of money to spend on hardware for your team, and especially if that team is going out into the field. Why is that? Well, this device weighs under 2 pounds. It's under $400, but it's a remarkable PC nonetheless. It runs Linux. It has a webcam. It has built-in speakers, a built-in microphone. You can plug in external monitor, external keyboard, external mice. It has 3 USB ports. It has built-in wireless. You can also jack into the Ethernet wired if you want to. It has a little keyboard, but a very serviceable keyboard. Certainly not full-scale, but certainly very easy to write columns and stuff on. It powers up really quickly. The battery lasts about 3.5 hours if you're not using Wi-Fi, less than that if you're using Wi-Fi all the time. 7-inch screen. As I said, it's Linux-based. It runs OpenOffice, which is entirely compatible with Microsoft Office. It has built-in Skype software, so you can actually use it to make Skype calls and Skype instant messaging. So in general, a very, very capable, very small web appliance, I would say, really. It allows you to really get work done on the PC because the software is built in, and the Linux operating system is really easy to access because the interface they've built is very tabbed and icon-based, so you don't really have to know your way around Linux at all to use it. So it's a great machine if you're in the field, great machine if you don't want to have a big heavy machine to carry around. It's also a great student machine, a great kids machine. As I said, it's under $400. It's available across Canada now. It would be hard to get, I think, because there's a waiting list for them. These things are selling like hotcakes. So really worth checking out, the Asus EEE PC. For online tools for the 21st century, I'm Wayne McPhail. Now, back to you, Megan.
Thanks, Wayne. I might just save up for that little machine.
Well, it's time for the trip back in time I promised earlier. This time we're going back via documentary. Here are the real women with their take on the documentary, The Weather Underground.
Anyway, so my choice this time is a documentary called The Weather Underground. And it's a documentary about the weathermen. This is a group that formed in the 1960s out of the split of SDS, Students for Democratic Society. Mm-hmm. And they were an extremist group that believed that basically their slogan was bring the war home. So the idea was they had protested and still the war in Vietnam was going on. Millions of people were being killed. And these are a bunch of middle class, often upper middle class white kids who felt that the way in which they would overcome their privilege was by becoming what we would today call terrorists.
At that point in our thinking, there were no innocent Americans, at least not among the white ones. All Americans were legitimate targets for attack. We wanted this country to taste a tiny bit of what it had been dishing out. Just like the passive Americans we derided, I acquiesced to this terrible, demented logic. Not only was I willing to take the risks and suffer the consequences, but more importantly, I was overwhelmed by hate. I cherished my hate as a badge of moral superiority.
So the movie is interviewing some of the key leaders. The ones that are best known are Bernadette Dorn and Mark Rudd.
Yes.
Who were leaders of SDS and then became these ultra-radicals. And there were several others, one of whom is still in jail for the crimes he committed in the 60s, who are being interviewed today, reflecting back on what they did and how they did it. And the film itself, of course, also goes back as well as today. And I think it was fantastic.
Oh, I agree.
I think it was one of the best documentaries I've ever seen of this genre.
Yeah.
Because... you know, most of them were, they're so smart, right?
Yeah.
Like now, and they really have reflected, with the singular exception of Bernadette Dorn, who I don't think has. The rest of them have really reflected back. And they can explain very well why they did what they did at the time.
I think they would all do it again.
You think so? No, I didn't think so. I don't think so.
Oh, I did. So. Naomi Jaffer said, yeah. Came right out and said, I'd go follow another revolution.
No, she would, but I don't think Mark Rudd would. I mean, he was the one who... Yeah. Anyway, actually, the SDS has reformed today. Interestingly enough, the Students for Democratic Society have reformed today. 2 years ago, they reformed themselves on campus. And I just got an email a couple of days ago that in Bellum, Washington, they've done a blockade at the port to stop arms from coming in. So there's... And I met a lot of SDSers at the U.S. Social Forum in Atlanta. So
really?
Yeah, so it's happening again. Not, hopefully not exactly in the same way. But radical organizing on campuses in the United States is happening again.
It really gave you a feeling for the flavor of the time and how unhappy everyone in the whole world was and how excited they were about exacting some sort of change.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was interesting was how much the press was vilified, even back then, because I tend to think of it as just like right now that people don't trust the press.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was very anti, you know, the left, the radical movements were very against the media, who they felt distorted what they did and so on and so forth. Yeah. Although the difference then and now is then the media covered what they did.
Yeah.
Now they ignore it. You know,
yeah.
So much more, right? They covered it and distorted it, but they still covered it.
That was Kathy Bond and Judy Rebick. You can find out what Kathy's pick was this week by taking a listen to their podcast. You can find it at rabble.ca/RPN/REE. That was a clip from Rabble Radio from 2007. To listen to the full program, visit the link in the show notes of this episode. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. This week's In Case You Missed It is presented by Rabble intern Leah Lagerdell.
In recent news regarding the ongoing Israel and Palestinian conflicts, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia has been detained in Israel since December of 2024. Recently, British Columbian healthcare professionals gathered in Vancouver this Monday, the 6th of July. They rallied to demand the release of Dr. Abu Safia and other Palestinian healthcare workers are still detained by Israeli forces. A report from Abu Safia's lawyer stated that he endured daily violence and beatings and that his health was deteriorating. Dr. Annalie Yassi, a member of BC Physicians Against Genocide, also known as BCPAG, states that, quote, "The Canadian government must push Israel to grant all detainees access to timely and appropriate medical care, pending the release in keeping with international law," end quote. BC Physicians Against Genocide started this gathering in order to advocate for Palestinian healthcare workers. 446 Palestinian healthcare workers are documented as detained. All of them have spent, on average, 670 days in detention. The healthcare workers' ages range from 21 to 66 years old. In Canadian climate change news, wildland firefighters of Canada are dealing with this wildfire season without the pension that other equally as important public safety professionals get. The National Union of Public and General Employees, also known as NUPGE, is pushing the Canadian government to change the National Occupational Classification, NOC, as it currently excludes wildland firefighters from the firefighter classification. The president of NUPGE, Bert Blunden, has emphasized that this misclassification does not only just harm wildland firefighters on paper. Since they aren't considered public safety workers, they don't get access to a higher pension reserved for firefighters, as well as an earlier retirement option. Wildland firefighters work in the most harsh environment that anybody can imagine, exposed to all kinds of toxins and smoke, Blunden said in an interview with Rabble.ca. A petition was sent in March to the House of Commons calling for reclassification of wildland firefighters. However, the government said that they will not change the NOC immediately. They met with stakeholders to identify whether the NOC actually impacted the pension, their earnings, and health-related benefits. In Canadian political news, Alberta Premier Danielle Smith has announced a potential east-west pipeline with Ontarian counterpart Doug Ford. Premier Smith said in a statement that, quote, "After signing an agreement last year to work together with Alberta and Saskatchewan to build new pipelines through an economic corridor from Alberta to Ontario, the government of Ontario has unveiled a potential route of a new 3,300-kilometer oil pipeline from Hardisty, Alberta to Sarnia, Ontario," end quote. Smith also stated that this pipeline could lead to an opportunity to use the corridor to reach the Atlantic Ocean, which may allow Alberta the ability to provide energy to European allies. Her overall claim in the statement is that the, quote, "project is about making Canada stronger," end quote. Next, with news on Prime Minister Carney, many experts have noticed the organized pushback against women's and 2SLGBTQIA+ people's rights. During his speech at Davos in January, the PM received many praises from world leaders and pragmatists alike. Prime Minister Carney may be creating partnerships with economic prosperity and security insight, but Canada is being called upon to step up for our identity and stand up for human rights. It seems like just 6 months after that speech, Prime Minister Carney has not been as focused on human rights as he said. A study has projected that the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, cuts could cost 9.4 million lives by 2030. Carney's stance on the U.S.'s initial attacks on Iran can come off as quite tepid. His response suggests that Canada is aware that its integration with the USA has led to some sort of subordination. However, the Prime Minister is knowledgeable about the need to create a human rights agenda for the next while. Canada continues to create many partnerships, strengthening cooperation with Europe or rebuilding partnerships with China and India. Human rights should be then integrated into these negotiations, and it's up to Prime Minister Carney to make that first move in picking up the pieces. With news on the Pacific War Games, peace seekers joined Indigenous activists last month outside of Pearl Harbor to protest U.S. military occupation. They plan to have the destructive Rim of the Pacific, RIMPAC 2026, War Games take place there from June 24th to July 31st. The RIMPAC Games are hosted by the commander of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. Controversially, the games include Israel, which is known to be occupying space in Gaza as a rogue state and invading Lebanon. Canada is also taking part in these games and have sent the sole functioning submarine in the Canadian fleet, as well as two Cyclone maritime helicopters and 800 military personnel to participate. Many local activists around the Pacific are protesting the RIMPAC Games. Pacific Peace Network took on RIMPAC 2026 in a webinar created by Ann Wright, a retired reservist with the U.S. Army for 29 years, and was a diplomat for 16 years before resigning in 2003 in opposition to the U.S. war on Iraq. The RIMPAC Games are criticized by Indigenous locals as well. An elder by the name of Pastor Ray Minicon, the founder of Scarred Tree Ministries in Australia, shares his thoughts on the occupation of the land. He says, quote, "The future global system that ignores the custodianship of Indigenous peoples over lands, waters, oceans, and ecosystems will fail not only morally, but ecologically. Indigenous knowledge systems remain among the most effective frameworks for protecting biodiversity, sustaining ecosystems, and maintaining balance between human societies and the living earth." End quote. And lastly, on pollution and fossil fuels, many Canadian officials and other powerful spokespersons are arguing that climate change is too expensive and are delaying the inevitable. Prime Minister Mark Carney is scrapping effective measures for climate change, such as carbon pricing and caps on the oil and gas industry. However, Carney boasted that Canada is producing more oil than ever, overtaken only by the United States and Russia. It doesn't help that the world is having record high temperatures and humidity as well, which is sending countless people to hospital for exhaustion and killing hundreds of thousands of people a year. In India, entire villages have had to abandon as droughts cause crop failure for the entire area. Soaring temperatures are killing many, so what can powerful officials do about this? Many solutions are being employed all around the world to combat pollution and the overuse of fossil fuels. Good jobs, efficient energy systems, and reducing pollution. However, governments, including Canada's, are focusing on measures that are unproven and allow the fossil fuel industry to continue profiting at the expense of its citizens. If you'd like to read more stories like these, please visit our website for more at rabble.ca.
And that's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. To support our show further, consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. You can also choose to subscribe to us over on Patreon for special bonus content of Rabble Radio. If you're already subscribed, consider making a donation to rabble.ca at rabble.ca/donate. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca. And thank you to Carl Nuremberg for supplying the music to this episode. I'm Nick Seabrook, and we'll talk to you next time.